Okay, today we have our good friend Tom Blake, who's here to come talk to us about performance management. Now, Tom, you are someone who's worked at board level as an HR executive over your entire career at organizations including Ahlstrom, Arxada, and Moonpig. Did I say Arxada correctly?
You did, yeah.
Excellent. You and I have spoken a few times, as you know, of course, about the evolution of performance management in the workplace from the bad old days of the annual appraisal to the modern times of continuous performance management. And you've even very kindly come and spoken at one of our community events. Thank you again for that.
Very welcome.
And you are now working as an interim chief people officer with a focus on organizational performance. So a big welcome to you and thanks for joining me again today.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, really. Always great to chat.
It's a pleasure. And just to start off with, then, just give us a little summary of the kind of work that you're doing at the moment.
Sure. So most people will probably know the title Chief People Officer. So I'm an interim Chief People Officer. So I lead HR functions for clients that I work with. But what I do with my clients is I have a real focus on the performance of the organization. So really helping them understand what is it the business and therefore the people within the business need to do to actually achieve their strategic aims. So then kind of rounds out nicely then once you figure out with the organization what the organization needs to do, how do you then figure out what people need to do within the structure of where the business is trying to go? So there's kind of a nice then synergy to then start thinking about performance management.
Excellent. And am I right in thinking that you do executive coaching as well?
I do. I'm an ICF accredited exec coach. So I focus one part of my work stream is working very specifically with people in HR, but then I also focus at the board level as well. So I have clients in kind of overlapping type roles.
Great. Well, I think that's what's so interesting is that you are working, on paper, thinking about organizational design and strategy around performance management, but then also actually working with the individuals who need to go and implement it and thinking about, individual behavior and the things that you say and do to actually put that into practice. So you cover the whole spectrum, which is really interesting. Okay, so
It certainly makes life interesting as well to kind of see it all round, as it were.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. It's one thing having ideas on paper and setting policies and practices, but actually, then kind of trying to get them actually implemented by everyone is another thing as well. Okay. Right. Well, I've got some questions for you. I'm going to pick your brains if that's all right. And I'm going to start off with a really broad one, which is just about performance management in general and how you see this as having evolved in the recent years. And then perhaps a little look to the future as well. Obviously we've seen this decade, I would say, or more of shift away from the, like I mentioned, the old annual appraisal. But yeah, how would you describe the evolution in recent years and where do you think it's going?
So I think that is actually the starting point. So kind of if you go back 10, 15 years ago, people were starting to really implement really big, really heavy annual appraisal type approaches, with a very clear link between performance and reward. So your outcome of your performance would define in some companies your bonus structure, in other companies your pay increase. And 10 to 15 years ago, you had lots of consultants around telling companies this is what you needed to do. To manage somebody properly, you have to have this massive performance management process. So we spent about 10, 15 years doing that and implementing it. And then I think what has happened over the last few years, particularly, is people are starting to go, hang on a minute, do we? And it's a really weird question because it's almost like what is the unintended consequence of having this big clunky process? So the intention behind it is so that the business knows how well everybody's performing, how you as an individual know how you're performing. And so that on paper sounds like a really good idea. It doesn't get used appropriately. It's one-off. We all know the pitfalls of doing this one-off cycle. So where we've started to move to, even if you still have this big clunky process, people are now starting to more talk about actually talking to your people frequently and actually understanding what we mean by a performance conversation or something within performance management. I think as we kind of move forward, I think we are getting to a realm now where organizations and people want things to be a bit more flexible. So actually, a big one-off cyclical process isn't really fitting the bill anymore. It might do in certain organizations where there might be some governance around it or some red tape that you kind of have to do these things. But even if you have to do them, you can be way more nimble during the year. Because I think where we are at a pivot point at the moment, it are more companies moving to doing things more frequently with less onus on the line manager kind of filling in paperwork, which is what performance management in a way has become. It's become a paperwork exercise, right? So I think what I can see moving forward is more flexibility, greater acknowledgement around achievement in the moment, rather than it's now your performance review, which to most people feels like an interview at the end of the year. And some people aren't quite sure if they're going to keep their job at the end of that interview or not. It's kind of retrospectively looking at everything. I think now what we're trying to do is push more towards the future and actually have kind of in moment recognition, in moment praise, in moment feedback as well, and course correction. You know, you just came off a presentation, hang on a minute, why don't you think about doing this and this next time, rather than waiting 9 months to go, oh, do you remember that presentation you did to the board 9 months ago? You should have done this and this. So I think moving forward, managers hopefully are starting to feel a bit more empowered as well. That's where I think we need to get to, is the organization empowering the manager to really lead performance management on a day-to-day basis with their teams.
That's right. And I think that's a key point, because we know that something like 82% of managers are accidental managers, perhaps. And you could imagine that if you haven't had much training or support or guidance as a line manager, you might just, it's the sort of thing you just might try and steer clear of, you might not feel empowered or entitled to have those sort of conversations more frequently, or know how to bring them up, or how to go from how was your weekend to a more of a performance conversation.
I would agree. I think to your point, managers aren't trained. So managers tend to do what was done to them. So if they had a manager, and again, you're talking generational shifts now. Yep. So people's managers were the managers of 10, 15 years ago. So that's starting to bake in. What I think we're seeing more of is more people being a lot more pragmatic, thankfully, and more training actually going into the role of the manager in this equation. But on the side of it, which I think is a really good thing, is we're seeing a generational shift in our employee base as well. So we're having new generations come into the workforce who expect feedback, who expect to be spoken to like an adult on a day-to-day basis, who have less of a view of a command and control type organization, and they don't want to be part of command and control organizations. They want more transparency, more openness. So I think we're starting to see shifts from different perspectives that actually mean that the way in which we talk to people in general at work has to change. It has to move forward. And I think you're absolutely right. The awkwardness that some managers have going from, you know, hi Rowley, how was your weekend? We really now need to talk about something that happened last week. It's palpable, you can see it. And yet, you know, talking to people, whether we like to accept it or not, talking to people is a bit of a skill. So there is a bit of a skills gap. I think companies need to do a lot more on focusing on helping their managers have open conversations and being open and being transparent. I think what has happened over the recent past, and you know, I've seen it, is some managers, and you know, we can only talk about broad spectrums, some managers are so afraid to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
They might get in trouble somewhere. Usually it's managers going, if I say the wrong thing, I'll get in trouble with HR. But hopefully that's also changing as well, because HR's there to support the business rather than being bullied. So I'm hoping managers are starting to feel a bit more confident about actually, no, it's openness is the right way to go. I might stumble a couple of times, but I still need to keep going. I think the other thing is a recognition about what a performance conversation actually is. I strip it all the way back personally when I'm talking to managers and leaders, and I kind of just put it in a context of saying to someone, you know, that piece of work you did yesterday, how did you get on with it? That's actually a performance conversation, because what you're doing is you're focusing on the task that they had. You're focusing on what they did. You're asking them how they felt about it. So you're trying to elicit a level of information from the individual, which in a way is actually making them think and reflect on what they did. Mm. And then you're going to offer them some feedback or a suggested way forward. You can do that in 5 minutes. That is a performance conversation.
Yeah.
So I think there's a relabeling of everything that needs to happen as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. Thank you very much. Very helpful. Now, Tom, what about, obviously it's been a while since we've all gone back to work, post-COVID, except few of us really have gone back to full-time in the office. So we've got a lot of people still managing remote workers or hybrid teams. Do you think that has had an impact on the way performance management needs to be done? And how, you know, I guess, is there any advice you would give managers who find themselves in that situation?
I mean, I've, in a way, I've been in a fortunate position. So I've worked in global companies for the last 15 years. So I've been surrounded by leaders and personally for having to manage people remotely anyway. I think what COVID has done is it's exposed more people to managing people in a different way. So No longer are that many people really managing the person sat next to them anymore. They're in a different, you know, place of work. They're in a different office, town, city, country, even different time zone. And I think what it can do, and it does become quite interesting, it can mean the manager can hide away from the conversations more easily because you have to be more deliberate when you're making contact with somebody virtually. You do have to be quite deliberate about it. It's one of the pitfalls of virtual working is you don't really have coffee conversations anymore, what we used to call coffee conversations. You don't bump into somebody walking through a corridor. And I'm not saying, you know, have a performance conversation when you're walking past someone, but walking past someone can make you think and go, ah, I know that I need to talk to Rowley today about this. So I think the art of managing people remotely is to be way more intentional about the types of conversations that you're going to have. And these don't need to be formal 2-hour conversations. It just needs to be like a 10-minute check. So what I've always done with most of my teams working remotely, and I've then coached other people to do the same, is at least once a day, making sure that you're even just dropping them a message on whichever platform, Slack, whatever, fill in the blank what your platform is. Just going, hey, how is everything today? Is everything all right? Is there anything you need help with? Are you stuck on anything? Which sounds quite trite to say, but actually that really is the role of the manager. The role of the manager is to try and unblock the path of the person that's actually trying to achieve something. Then on a more frequent basis, I might just kind of drop somebody a note and go, do you fancy having a cup of tea? You know, I think there is a level of being quite intentional about it as well, to go, this isn't a performance conversation, because some people then get anxiety with a manager going, free for a catch-up. And I get it. I've been there. I think we've all been there. I think once you know your team and your team know you, you can be a little bit more informal with the sort of, do you fancy having a cup of tea? Because they're going to know that if you're kind of coming for a cup of tea, it's more of a personal conversation.
Yeah.
And if you're coming actually because you need to talk to them about something, you change the phraseology. To your point earlier, words matter. Mm. How we say things really matters. And also when we say things also matters. And conversely, when we don't say things, that also matters as well. So if someone's done something that really needs some corrective coaching there and then, leaving it is going to build within the individual an assumption or an expectation that what they did was okay, because they haven't had any feedback. In the absence of feedback, you carry on doing the same thing. So I do think virtual working does make it easier for managers to hide. So poor managers will use virtual working as an excuse as to, I can't manage my team because, whereas good managers will actually step into it and find a way to own it. Because ultimately what we're really talking about is a relationship with another person.
Yeah. So
it's finding a way to have that relationship. I kind of call it a joy. I've actually had the joy of starting in a few different organizations where I've been completely remote. I've even been in one organization where just because of it was during COVID and we couldn't get out. It was when I was helping Moonpig. I didn't actually meet any of them face to face at all. But we still developed rapport. We still developed great ways of working. We still developed an understanding of our own bizarre senses of humor that kind of make us as people. And that works really well. It just takes commitment on both sides of both people kind of coming to the party and willing to be a little bit open and a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah. Just picking up on your note about working remotely and you know, sending a message over Teams or Slack. I actually found it very helpful with a bit more remote working because we have an open plan office. It can be, and in many offices, it can be a big deal to pull someone into a meeting room, right? And you get to see them walking across the floor and, you know, ooh, this is okay. This is a confidential, serious discussion. It's sort of in front of everybody else. And actually now, if you're working from home, if everyone's working from home, you can just say, let's chat now, 10 minutes or 5 minutes. That's it. It doesn't have to be a big deal. And you can just get them straight away.
I think you're right. And, you know, I've been in those organizations before where you kind of go, oh, dear.
Yeah. See me next, please, Tom. Yeah.
As your eyes will start, following the person as they're about to go to somebody to collect them and take them somewhere else. And you do. But that also tells you a lot about the culture of that business and very much the individual, you know, that individual. We've probably all got one of those individuals in our mind.
Yeah.
You know, if they were less kind of task focused, because that's really what drives that. Oh, I know what they're going to do. They're walking over to Rowley, so I know what's about to happen. If they actually had, you know, if they were a bit more open and they were more regularly kind of coming out and talking to people, you wouldn't then get that because you don't have the assumption. I won't mention names or companies because I'll still be a bit of a giveaway.
Yes.
I did have a senior leader at one point who was an introvert, and we all accepted that they were an introvert and would do this. They would kind of walk up to people and go, let's go and have a conversation. And you knew it was a bad conversation. They then got some feedback in a roundabout way that basically said, be a bit more visible so people can get to know you a bit more.
Yeah.
So that when you're kind of having to pull people aside, it's not quite so obvious. And that individual tried really hard to do that. It was you could see it was really
an effort.
Really hard for them. It was a big effort, massive effort. And it made you as an individual feel really uncomfortable. So they're like, come along, sit on your desk, and you're like, I don't quite know what to do here. But you know, at least they tried. They tried really hard. But it is that element of then if you then take that into a virtual space, you're right, you can be a bit more private about things. You can be a bit quicker getting to people as well. And actually, I think you can have different conversations with people online compared to being face-to-face, because a difficult conversation face-to-face is even more difficult just because of the way as us as humans, we operate.
Yeah.
You know, they always say, I've got two small children, whenever I'm trying to have a difficult conversation with one of my kids, it's usually in the car. Mm. So we're not looking at each other.
Yeah.
So that the individual doesn't feel threatened, because actually we can feel threatened by just people looking at us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can achieve something quite similar on a webinar or Zoom or online, where you're not quite necessarily that intensity of face-to-face conversations can actually make the more challenging conversations a bit less intrusive.
I absolutely agree. It's a tool that should be in everyone's toolkit. And when used at the right time, the right people and right situation, it can be really, really beneficial, actually, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. One more question for you. And it's around technology, not just Zoom and Teams, but about performance management applications. Obviously, we have appraised, and I've got my own strong views on how technology can help or influence and enhance performance management, but we're not here to talk about my ideas. I want to hear your unbiased view. Thinking about some of the projects that you run, performance management implementations or even changing manager behavior and introducing more coaching style conversations. Mm-hmm. How have you seen technology, or how do you think technology has helped you or could help you? And then finally, are there any kind of pitfalls to be aware of that you think some of the listeners might find useful?
So I personally view the role of technology as a facilitator. So it's not there to own anything. It's not there. I'm not doing, you know, you still have managers going, I'm doing this because the system said so. No, no, you're doing this because it's the right thing to do. What the system should be doing is then facilitating in any way that it can to help that along. So I personally, I have a really bad memory, and most of the people that I work with end up kind of quite quickly knowing I have a bad memory. So I end up using a system that actually helps me, so I can put notes in it. I can kind of take and solicit feedback as I'm going, because my brain, like all of us now, you know, we're all trying to think about a thousand things at once. I like having places where I can just brain dump some stuff. And going back 5-10 years ago, where we only had very big clunky performance management systems, that was kind of like my own notes or a notepad or something. So I think moving forward, the way in which, firstly, tech can help is A, to facilitate, B, to help set expectations about what should and shouldn't be happening. So it becomes a bit of a repository and a destination for managers to go.
Yeah.
I think the tech can also be a way in which training can be delivered, point in time training to the manager that kind of goes, I need to have a difficult conversation. I can't get to talk to anybody about how to have that conversation, but actually the system hosts and houses some training that might actually be quite useful or relevant just to have a quick dip into. So no kind of like, you know, I'm not talking about a 2-day training course. I'm talking about bite-sized sorts of information.
Just in time. Yeah.
Because you then get to drive and go, oh, hang on a minute. I just want to hear somebody having it almost like I want to hear somebody having a difficult conversation just to help refresh. I think the biggest power then is the data that is then sat behind. I'm a big proponent of using the right data in HR and to actually help drive business outcomes. Because what we tend to see is, particularly with clunky processes, you kind of go, right, at a top line, the business might not quite achieve what it was supposed to, whether it's an EBITDA goal or whatever. If I then look at my performance management data, everybody's amazing. So you kind of go, how can the two really align? Because for us to be amazing, we have to have overachieved on our organizational goals. So this is where you kind of go, the smart techs now, thankfully, you can actually do, whether it's a top-down or bottom-up, but I still, it's a very old term I use. I use the golden thread terminology. Very much thinking about the objectives at the top of the organization, so where I'm helping businesses define what their objectives are, all the way down through the organization, everybody should see how they are able to impact on the organizational objectives. And actually, that's what a system can also help do, to actually really align people in terms of what it is they're trying to achieve. It, in its role of facilitator, it can then also really help communication between leadership and management, management and the individual, because actually you can have a real-time view on how things are going, particularly if we use tech in the right way and we get a bit more used to, actually, do you know what, I'm going to go into the performance management system just to do X, Y, and Z, and stop thinking about it as a performance management system. It's a tool to help me have the conversations that I need to have. But look, information is there. I can pass information. I'm getting information down from my manager. I can ask people for information as well. We're getting a lot more used to using the right tech in HR now, which I think is a great. I think we're stepping away from the big, clunky, cyclical processes, which the old tech was designed to fulfill.
Yeah.
So pitfall in a way, the challenge, I think, particularly for big organizations that still have a clunky process that may not want to re-implement a load of technology, and that's fine, but it's how do you make things a bit more day-to-day when you still might have to retrofit something back into a big clunky process? If I could have my way, personally, yes, I'd be going around telling everybody to blow everything up. Companies like Workday might not like me, but that's fine. But you know, you're even in a way starting to see some shifts happening in the tech market to become and reposition themselves as a facilitator of what it should be, rather than a driver of the process. And that's what people need to step away from. The amount of times that I've heard people say, "I'm doing this because HR told me to." As soon as you've got that thinking in your business, you've got it wrong. You've absolutely got it wrong. Whether you like to hear that or not, it's true. It's wrong. Nobody should be filling something in because HR told me to. They should be doing it because they want to make sure that they're getting their employees the right resources at the right time to help drive their careers.
Absolutely. Okay. I couldn't have put it better myself. Thank you, Tom. I'm not going to try and add anything on the end that sort of, get the last word in. I'm just going to say thank you very much, Tom. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you as ever. Where can people go to find out a bit more about you?
It's the best place because I'm actually going through a website redesign at the moment.
Okay.
But you can find me on LinkedIn particularly. I have a very simple ending. I am Tom Blake HR on LinkedIn, so you can find me there.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Tom, and we'll catch up again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.